Good morning, friends in Evanston. My name is Emily Snyder, and I'm on the preaching team down here in Campbellsville, Kentucky. We're so excited to be doing this Advent journey together with you all. It is week 2 of Advent. It is the week of peace, and I think that really comes out in the passage that we're about to read is Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 10. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the spirit of counsel and of might, the spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips, he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young child will put its hand into the viper's nest, and they will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. In that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him, and his resting place will be glorious.
Well, good morning, everyone. It was nice to see Emily's face. As we talked about last week, we are in a series. We're in an Advent series, actually. We're in the season of Advent. This is the second Sunday in Advent, and we know that people all over the world in their churches are kind of observing Advent together. They're, in fact, even reading the same passages together. They're talking about the same scriptures together. And we thought that one of the ways that we could do that is by locking arms with our dear friends at Vineyard Campbellsville. And so we've been like meeting weekly. We've been sharing different resources with one another. If I'm honest, they've given us way more than we've given them. I hope that will continue. No, I'm kidding. But it's been really interesting. It's been really, really good. Hey, maybe when you think about Advent, you think primarily about Advent being about Christmas, and you think, man, I love Christmas. Is Christmas, I mean, how many of you, Christmas is your favorite time of year? Like, many of us love Christmas, yes? We love, how many of you love the Christmas lights? Anybody ever go to New York City and try to go look at the lights? Lee's? You know, almost thought I lost all my children through the massive press of humanity. We were trying to push the stroller. Three kids in New York City trying to push the stroller. I think people thought we had landed from another planet. A lot of us think about Advent and a lot of us think about Christmas. And we're like, man, I love Advent. I love Christmas because, man, this is about Jesus being born on earth. And boy, isn't that hope. And you'd be right. But many of us, when we think about Christmas, we don't think about merry and bright. Maybe for some of us, we've come to dread Christmas because Christmas is that one time where we're going to be alone. Or maybe when we think about Christmas, we look at the table and we think about how full it used to be. And so Christmas for us is not merry and bright. Christmas is tinged with sadness. Because of what used to be. And maybe in Christmas we think of loss. And that's why some churches actually do services around Christmas time just to create space for folks like that. And that's something that we hope that we'll do here in the future. And I guess that what I want to say to you, if you fall in the latter camp today and you've come to Advent and you've thought, oh no, it's Christmas again. I'm going to have to think about all that. I'm going to have to wrestle again with loss. I just want you to know that maybe Advent actually has more to do with you than you might think. Because if you look at anything in the Book of Common Prayer or anything like liturgies around Advent, what you'll find is that Advent is tinged with sadness. If you look at Advent, you'll look at the way that the global church has observed Advent, you'll find that Advent actually is more about lament. Because Advent is about, well, you came once and then you left. And so Advent actually is about sort of being in a valley between one high place and another high place that's coming, when he will come back again. And so that's why when you're singing Christmas carols, you're like, wait, are these Christmas carols about when he came or about when he's coming? Like, just take the Christmas carol that we all sing every year, Joy to the World. Joy to the World is, how many of you know that Joy to the World is more about him coming back again than about him coming for the first time? Anybody know that when you look at it, right? So Advent actually is a liturgy of hope and lament in the midst of that time when we live between the first coming and the second coming. It's more like a valley, which is why we called this series Bright Valley. And if it's a valley, then that means that what Advent is about is Advent is about light coming into dark places. Advent is fundamentally about a forward-looking hope that the leader who once was here among us, the Messiah, that we were all like, man, this is it. I mean, all the people around were like, yeah, this is surely the king that we've come to expect. And of course, he did lots of unexpected things. And so then they thought, well, maybe he's not. But then he left, and then he's left us his spirit, but then maybe we're like, wait, why did you leave? But we know and we hold on to the promise that he's coming back again. And so I guess the thing that I want to say as we start this message is we live in a valley. We live in a valley between one high place and another high place, and Advent is here for us. And how many of you know that our world right now feels like a valley? Doesn't it feel a little bit like a valley? Does anybody ever feel like, man, things used to be pretty good? Anybody ever think like that? Some of you are like, wait, what? Others of you are like, yeah, that's absolutely true. Here's one of the ways that I think we live in a, one of the ways that I think we live in a valley right now is that we are living in a time when suspicion about leadership is at an all-time high. Wouldn't you agree? Suspicion about leadership is at an all-time high, yes? And so, I mean, I could go through every institution if you'd like me to, but wouldn't that be dreadful? About all the ways that leaders have maybe disappointed or enraged us, right? Or if we just stay home, close to home for a moment and talk about the church, I mean, I could talk about the uncovering of systemic abuse in the Catholic Church. Or I could talk about, here in Chicago, I could talk about like two pastors that were significant in the church, like succumbing to moral failure. I mean, I could talk about leadership crisis even in the Vineyard. I mean, some of you know that the church that our founder started was a church called Vineyard Anaheim. Founder was a guy named John Wimber. And when John Wimber passed, he turned the church over to someone. And this changed leadership a few times. And this most recent group of leaders has taken the Anaheim Vineyard out of the Vineyard. Does anybody know this? Probably it doesn't really make sense. I mean, obviously some of us do. Taking it out. I mean, it's been written up in some of the news publications recently because they're embroiled in a lawsuit. And what's that lawsuit about? Well, I mean, presumably, the new leaders have taken the church out of the movement for its more than $60 million worth of assets. And so leaders, unfortunately, have often, I mean, disappointed. I mean, you can think of leaders that have inspired you, yes? You can think of leaders that were good leaders for you. You could think of maybe a teacher that believed in you, believed in your potential, gave you opportunities to do things. You can think about leaders maybe at churches, some of the churches you've been. But most of us have a way longer list when it comes to leaders that have disappointed, don't we? I mean, we're privy to all sorts of different kinds of news about people who have been given responsibility and have not done such a good job with it. And so I guess I'm here to say that part of the reason why we observe Advent is Isaiah 11. We observe Advent because we need to be reminded that that guy is coming back, Isaiah 11. We need to be reminded that there was a leader who once came changed the universe, set it back on the way to being made right and new. That leader once came, and that leader is coming back, one who will be led by the Spirit, one who will be gentle and lowly, one who is meek, one whose character is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We observe Advent in our valley. What makes our valley bright is because that real leader who once came is coming back again, and we can count on that. That's what we talk about. That's why we do Advent. To remind ourselves that the reality and the promise and the beauty that he brought when he first came is coming back again. Which brings us to our text in Isaiah 11. In Isaiah's time, there was also a crisis in leadership. Also, suspicion of leadership was really high. Let me give you some background. So just stick with me. We're going to do some background, and that might feel like it's in the weeds, but I promise that we will emerge from the weeds at some point before the morning or the morning is over. All right, I promise. Okay, well, anyway, so they were in a crisis of leadership. So what was happening with Israel? Israel was in a crisis of leadership. There were poor leaders that surrounded them and that were within them, all right? So there was a crisis of leadership without, so a crisis of leadership in that there were leaders around them that were failing them, and then also a crisis of leadership within. So Isaiah, who is Isaiah? Isaiah was a prophet. And what was he sent to do? Well, he was sent to warn the nation of Israel to take seriously their call as a strange and holy nation to be a blessing to all peoples. I mean, Isaiah was sent to warn them, hey, listen, you need to take seriously this call. You've been chosen for a purpose. The reason why you're chosen is to be a blessing to others, to be different, to be strange, to be holy. And of course, they didn't take that call seriously, which is why the warnings came. And even more than that, the kings, Israel's kings, more or less didn't take that call to be holy seriously. And despite warning after warning, what ended up happening with the nation of Israel, the nation that we talk about all the time, is that their disobedience resulted in discipline. So what did that discipline look like? Well, God disciplined the nation to turn the hearts of peoples back to them, since only in him was found true life. And so that discipline looked like anybody, it looked like exile. That's what it looked like. It looked like exile. And so here's the situation that we find ourselves in Isaiah chapter 11. So there's a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. So this is the confusing thing about the Bible here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this. So how many of you know that when Solomon ended his rule, one of the things that happened at the end of his rule is that the kingdom was torn into two. Does anybody remember that? So there's a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. And what was the northern kingdom called? Anybody? Israel was called Israel. Sometimes it was called Samaria. And what was the southern kingdom called? Does anybody know? Judah. It was called Judah, right? Wow, Bible scholars in here. So Israel and Judah. Well, here's a really confusing thing about the southern kingdom. The southern kingdom was called Judah, and a lot of times in the Bible it's also called Israel. So sometimes when you're reading, you have to read the context because Israel sometimes is Judah, and Judah sometimes is Israel, all right? Well, that's not really the important point. What I want to say about the context for Isaiah is that the northern kingdom of Israel allied with neighboring Aram to say, let's go take Jerusalem. We're going to go invade Judah. So we're going to invade our brothers and sisters, and we're going to take them out and take the city, because that's where the temple is. And so what happened? The leaders, particularly King Ahaz, who will make an appearance in a couple weeks, but the Davidic king, Ahaz, what did he do? He was like, man, they're coming to invade. I'm going to call my friends in Assyria, and I'm going to ask them to help us. So I'm not going to trust in God necessarily, and you'll find, we'll read this in Isaiah chapter 7 in a couple weeks. But I'm going to trust in Assyria to protect our land. And so what ended up happening? Well, again, discipline. God gave Judah over to Assyria, who was not to be trusted. And so then the people of Israel are like, man, we're ping-ponging between Assyria and Aram, and our own brothers and sisters are not to be trusted. Man, this is leadership crisis. And how do I know that it's leadership crisis? Well, turn with me to Isaiah chapter 10. Here's where we go. We're going to talk about the leadership crisis. I promise there's a point to all of this. But leadership crisis, Isaiah 10. We're going to start with the leaders from without. We're going to start with Assyria. Here is God declaring that judgment is coming to Assyria because they showed no mercy to Israel or Judah, all right? I will punish the king of Assyria for the willful pride of his heart and the haughty look in his eyes. And then he goes on to say, the light of Israel will become a fire, their Holy One a flame. In a single day it will burn and consume his thorns and his briars. The splendor of his forests and fertile fields it will completely destroy, as when a sick person wastes away. And the remaining trees of his forest will be so few that a child could write them down. Now, why did I read all that? Well, partly I read it so that you could see that leadership failure was happening outside of Judah, but I also read it because I wanted you to see this symbol of forest. So in the Old Testament, forest is a symbol of exaltation. It's a symbol of splendor, of glory. So anytime you see the forest or the cedars of Lebanon, that's actually about glory, right? And so what is Isaiah saying here? Isaiah is saying that the nation that has devastated Judah will be devastated and consumed itself. And the way that Isaiah communicates that is by saying their forest will be stripped and destroyed and consumed. That's how he says it, right? So forests, really, really important. Hang on to that, because it's not just forests of Assyria, it's also forests of Judah. So the Lord will cut off from Israel both head and tail. So this is about Judah or Israel, both palm branch and reed in a single day. The elders and dignitaries are the head. The prophets who teach lies are the tail. Those who guide this people mislead them, and those who are guided are led astray. And so this is about leadership failure within Judah. And here's what he says in Isaiah 6. The land is utterly forsaken, and though a tenth remains in the land, it will again be laid waste. But as the terebinth and oak leave stumps when they are cut down, so the holy seed will be the stump in the land. So in other words, what is Isaiah saying? Well, what is the Lord saying through Isaiah? The Lord is saying through Isaiah, okay, I'm going to ravage the forests of Assyria, their glory, and the holy seed, in other words, the chosen nation, Israel, is what? Everybody say it with me, it's a stump. Yeah, we can all say that again. Let's all say that again. Everybody say it with me. Israel is a stump. And what's a stump? It's a dead tree. So it's not even a forest, it's a dead tree. This is what he's saying. So if you have stuck with me to this point, would you pat yourself on the back? Just go ahead and pat yourself on the back, because that's a lot of background, and it brings us up to the meat of our message. By the way, that was all just introduction. So if you're looking at that going, man, that was long, I promise that this won't be as long. But I just want you to know that this forest, this stump thing is really, really important, because here's where the hope actually comes. So if there's leadership crisis from without, which is Assyria, and leadership crisis from within in Israel or Judah, and the forest is like a symbol for it, and the stump is like, okay, it's a dead tree. Well, here's what Isaiah says next. A shoot, this is verse 1 in our passage today, will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. So out of this dead stump, out of the stump of Jesse, the father of David, comes a shoot, a humble branch. This is the news that I believe is bursting out of Isaiah. I mean, I think Isaiah is like, hey, I've got some warnings for you, and hey, the news isn't very good, but I just can't wait to tell you about this tree branch, this stump, or this shoot. I can't wait to tell you. He mentions it a bunch of times. He's like, have I got news for you? Your leaders have failed you, but there is one who won't. And so against all odds, out of the dead stump of Jesse, who, by the way, Father David, who what that's meant to make us think about is that it comes from the line of David, which was the promise, right? Comes a shoot, a king who will bring salvation, deliverance. In other words, what's going to come out of what's dead? Life. Which sounds an awful lot like our gospel story, doesn't it? Life coming out of what is dead. Out of what is dead comes the leader here in Advent that we all hope for. Out of what is a dead stump comes an unlikely shoot, an unlikely branch, and he is the leader of the world, the Prince of Peace, as Isaiah calls him elsewhere. And so today, all I want to do is I want to get to the meat of our message, which is basically to talk about this king. Because that's all that Isaiah 11 talks about. He talks about this king in like three different ways. The first way he talks about it is, man, this king is so led by the Spirit that, as one commentator put it, the very breath of God is about him. That's the first thing that we need to talk about. Second thing that we need to talk about, the quality of his rule is completely and totally just. And then the third thing that we need to say is, when we have that kind of just king who is in charge, that just leader who is in charge, what's the effect? And the effect is peace in every corner of the earth. And so let's talk about those three things, Isaiah chapter 11. All right, here we go. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding. Remember, I said the first point is that the Spirit leads this leader. The Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of the knowledge and the fear of the Lord. In fact, he will even delight in the fear of the Lord. And so why is this good news? This is good news because, for a lot of reasons, but context, Messiah, I mean, like, when the Israelites would hear this, they would hear like, oh, wow, this Spirit, this leader is anointed with the Spirit. Messiah literally means anointed one. And one way to read anointed one is anointed with the Spirit. And so they would have thought, okay, well, we got to pay attention because this is the guy. This is who's coming. This is our leader. This is our Messiah. And also this whole thing about being from the tribe of Jesse, the promised king was supposed to come from the line of David. And here's Isaiah saying, no, man, this leader is going to be more leader than any other leader that you've had, even David. And he says that by saying the triple weight of the Spirit, wisdom and understanding, counsel and might, knowledge and fear. He's saying the triple weight of the Spirit is on this Messiah who will be characterized by the very breath of God about him. And this is the leader that I want. Isn't this the leader you want? I mean, don't you want a leader who's going to be totally and completely led by the Spirit? Who's not going to rule by data or facts. I mean, I'm not saying those aren't important, but this is a leader who's going to be ruled completely and totally by the Spirit, not necessarily by what's most efficient or what's most successful or what's most expedient. I want that leader. It seems to me that in our moment, we could use that leader, don't you think? Yes. We could use the kind of leader who's led by the Spirit and not led, say, by anxiety. Or we could use the kind of leader who's led by the Spirit and not necessarily by whatever strong faction, you know, that leader maybe wanted to please. We could use a leader who is not who is not swayed by the anxiety of the moment, a leader who isn't influenced by toxicity or by the naysayers or by people pleasing. We need a leader who stands firm in the Spirit. Now, when I started with leadership crisis, some of you drew the conclusion that maybe what I was saying is we shouldn't have leaders at all. Has anybody ever thought that? By the way, don't raise your hand. Don't raise your hand, by the way. I'm not trying to make an apologetic, by the way, for me as the leader. I'm trying to make an apologetic for this king as the leader. And so I think that some of us oftentimes think when it comes to leaders, man, maybe we shouldn't have them. But even the secular Jewish rabbi, or I guess he's not secular, he's a Jewish rabbi, but he's a therapist and leadership guru, Ed Friedman, he says, no, we need leaders. Why do we need leaders? Because leaders act as immune systems for our institutions. So that's why we need leaders. We need leaders who take in all of the viruses of our age, and what they do instead is transmit health and vitality instead. That's the kind of leader that we need, who won't be swayed by the moment, who won't be throttled by anxiety. That's the kind of leader that we need. And boy, that sounds impossible, doesn't it? But not for this leader. Now, I can understand the impulse, an impulse that I've shared for many, many years. How many of you, when you go, now I'm going to talk about voting here for a moment. So if that triggers you, you could just put your hands over your ears for a moment. But I'm just going to say, like, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm just going to say, I can understand the impulse that many of us Christians have when it comes to elections. Won't we vote for anybody that shows a shred of faith? I mean, like, if somebody stands up there and talks about their faith, I think a lot of us are like, whoa, that seems real. That seems authentic. Maybe I could trust that person. Well, why do we do that? Well, I think the reason we do that is because we know, even though many of us haven't held political office, we know, man, it seems pretty hard to lead in this, doesn't it? I mean, can you imagine holding political office trapped between the tensions of all that we are like living in right now, all the racial reckonings, all the pandemic? And if you think like, well, I would really like a leader that has some shred of faith, because isn't some divine intervention in order, don't you think? And here's Isaiah saying, yeah, like the thing about leaders is oftentimes we might have great hope in a leader. They might exhibit exactly what we would hope that they would exhibit. They might exhibit true faith or a demonstration of like actually listening to the Spirit. And we think about a leader like that. And then we look at them and we think, man, they're under a structure or a system. And they're not actually able to do all that much. And so then again, we're disappointed. And here's Isaiah saying, no. This king, this leader will have the Spirit on him. The Spirit of wisdom, understanding, counsel, might, knowledge, and fear of the Lord. And also, he will change everything. Because the quality of his rule will be completely and totally just. I mean, here's what Isaiah says. Isaiah says, he will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness, he will judge the needy. With justice, he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips, he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt. Faithfulness, the sash around his waist. How many of you know that if this actually happened in the world, it would change everything? Like if you looked at this, if he did this, it would change everything. Well, how would it change everything? Well, first of all, he won't judge by appearances, right? He's not judged by what he sees with his eyes. He won't decide by what he hears with his ears. He won't decide on rumor. He will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will judge the needy with righteousness. And what does that actually mean? That means that he will have the capacity to do the right thing in all circumstances. That's what righteousness means. And how many of you know that's really hard to do? Like, I try to do that, and it's hard for me to do that. In all circumstances, do the right thing. But this is our king. This is what our leader would do. In fact, righteousness and faithfulness are so fundamental to this king that Isaiah calls these qualities a waistcloth, or the sash around his waist. In other words, they're like the garments, undergirding garments of a person going out to do some kind of strenuous activity. And here's why this is such good news. Isn't judging with our eyes and judging with what we hear with our ears, isn't that exactly what we always do? Don't we do that? Don't you judge with your eyes and what you hear with your ears? Don't we do that? Isn't that what we do? I mean, like, that's not, maybe not what we always should do, but we do that all the time, don't we? We are swayed by a person's appearance. We make all sorts of judgments all the time based on even the way a person talks. Anybody ever felt that way? Anybody ever felt like unjustly judged by someone because of how you showed up a certain day or by what you have to say? We have all sorts of unconscious prejudice and biases, and they're no more than skin deep. And when we actually take the time to get to know a person, we can peel away those biases, but we don't have time to get to know everyone. We just don't. And so on a personal level, we oftentimes make these snap judgments on other people without even knowing who they are. And Isaiah's saying, yeah, that's not going to be the way this king works. And it's not just on a personal level, by the way. It's also structural. You see, he will strike the earth, right? I mean, it's not just one person to person. It's also like the systems of this world is structural. He's not going to judge by what he sees with his eyes or by what he hears with his ears on a structural level too. You know, that's also something that we do, by the way. As Bryan Stevenson says, he founded the Equal Justice Initiative. If, you know, some of you have heard of the book Just Mercy, it's totally worth reading. Well, here's what he says about the way that the world works right now. The criminal justice system, for example, treats you better if you are rich and guilty than if you're poor and innocent. And what is that about? That's about judging with the eyes. That's about making decisions about what you hear with your ears. And that's not this leader. I mean, if you can imagine this leader, this king. Imagine that this leader, this king, would completely break the systems of governance of our world, restructure everything, not on the basis of appearance or on rumor, but on the wisdom and fear and knowledge of the Lord. That's going to be this leader. This is our king. If you can imagine for a moment, if this king had been in charge when the boats turned up on the shores of Portugal in 1400s with slaves and the monstrous charge coming from those who had captured them, that these folks, these people were less than because they were darker skinned. You can imagine that king. How many of you know that that king would have broken every chain? That king would have said, no. He would have made decisions for those underneath the system on their behalf. He would have excoriated the petty judgments of the Portuguese. That's the leader. It's not just personal, it's also structural. In other words, his rule, his structural rule, would defy every human effort to seek our own good at the expense of others. That's not how he does it. That's not how he rules. The quality of his rule is completely and totally just. And so what happens when you have a king like that? What happens when you have a leader who faithfulness and righteousness are like the undergirding garments, a fundamental part of a king? Well, the quality of that rule has an effect. And the effect of that rule is peace everywhere. The wolf will lie, will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear, their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young child will put its hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Such a glorious passage. And we could spend so much time in it, but I just want to say one thing about it, and that's this. When you have a just king, when you have a king who has righteousness and faithfulness like the sash around his waist, the effect of his rule is a kind of confounding peace that stretches to every corner of the earth. There is no place on earth that this peace does not touch. So every image, every metaphor is meant to communicate that there is no corner of God's good creation that won't be touched by peace. A wolf with a lamb, a leopard with a goat. I mean, we talk a lot about those. We don't have enough time. I just want to say that when the earth is filled with the knowledge of the Lord as waters cover the sea, that means that peace goes everywhere. When it's filled with the knowledge of the just king who will make decisions, you don't have to make decisions for yourself. The Lord will make decisions for you. He will be for you. He is not against you. Then peace happens everywhere. It's like the new Eden. And here's what this passage means to me. This is the point that I want to make. This means that the effect of peace is complete. That means that the circle of peace is completely enclosed. And what do I mean by that? That means that it's not just a king who extends peace to you. You're included in that peace, and you begin to extend peace too. That means that you don't get to just observe or watch or be spectators of the peaceful king. You get to do the peace too. You're not just participants, or you're not just recipients, you're participants. You get the good rule of the king, and you get to do the good rule of the king too. Now, I've got small children. You've maybe seen them running around at some point. They act like they own the place. Yes, the chairs here are opportunities to run, right? I mean, and not between them, on top of them. But here's one thing that strikes me about them that I think is true about all of us. I mean, if you strip away our experiences, maybe our negative experiences, and maybe some of our cynicisms, I think this is true of us. When I'm with my little kids and I start doing something fun, whatever it is, they want in. When I start doing, or start eating something. Anybody ever with kids ever but like have something that you want to eat that you don't want your kids to eat? So you find some corner of your house and you begin to eat it. And then all of a sudden the door bursts open and your kids come in. And what do they want to do? They want to eat it too, don't they? They don't want to just watch you do it. Like, oh, that looks delicious, Daddy. I'm so glad you got to enjoy that. No, they want to eat it too, don't they? And here's the funny thing about that. I mean, it happens also when I try hard things too. When I try strenuous things, when I try like hard activity, it's not just the stuff that's fun, it's also the stuff that's challenging they want to do too. So if we're at the playground and we're doing monkey bars and they see me wipe out, they still want to try. Or they see my wife doing pull-ups. They're like, not me, but my wife doing pull-ups. They're like, well, I want to try that too. We're made to try and do, not just to watch. How many of you know that? We're made to do. We're not made to just try. We're not made to just watch. That's why one of our fondest sayings here in the Vineyard is everybody gets to play. Why is that such a fond saying for us? Because it's really good news. Because we're made to not just watch the peaceful reign of the King. We're also made to do it too. And that's part of what this means. How many people are excluded in these verses? No one is, not even the animals. The animals even get to play with peace. And if you want to contextualize this, you know, you could. I mean, like I had some people come up to me and say, hey, you know, like I was thinking about this in Chicago and I was just thinking about the rat will live with the feral cat and the pigeon will lie down with the peregrine falcon. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen those two go at it with each other, but we do. We've seen it a couple of times, right? I mean, it's just that everybody gets to participate, even the smallest animal, even the smallest being in creation. That's the good news of the King. The good news of the King is you don't just get to watch me do stuff. You get to do it too. And how many of you know that, man, when you get to do it too, that gets really fun? It's only so much fun just like watching people do stuff that's fun, right? Like, my kids like to watch other people play video games. Anybody? I'm like, what? That doesn't seem fun. At some point, they're like, man, I got to just play it myself. I just got to do it myself. Of course you do. Because the good news of the kingdom is that you get included too. You get to do it too. And I know I'm running out of time here. I just want to say this as like a side note. I just have to tell you that this is how I think about leadership. I don't think leadership means being forceful or charismatic or dynamic. And some of you are thinking, well, yeah, that's pretty clear. But I think about leadership as being under the leader. The one who's going to come back again and rule everything and make everything right and everyone will benefit. I think about my leadership that way. I don't even think of myself as the leader. I think of myself as the under steward. I'm just here to take care of this treasure that God has entrusted to me. And I think of him as the leader. I mean, like if we could, it would be kind of interesting. If we could, we would. We'd just put Jesus as the leader on our website. You know, and then people would be like, well, wait, why is he the leader? And what? Anyway, you know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, like, that's how I think of it. How many of you know that the king that is talked about in Isaiah chapter 11, I mean, that's our leader, not me. Like, I'm not trying to make an apologetic for me as the leader. I'm trying to make an apologetic for Isaiah 11. I'm trying to tell you that I don't even think of myself as necessarily leading this church. I think of myself as serving the one who does. And by the way, when you look at Isaiah 11, I mean, this is a major point. I don't want to gloss over it because we're about to close here. I mean, we are Christians, right? Most of us in this room are. And some of us are interested. But we believe that Isaiah 11, what is it? It's messianic prophecy. And who is it about? It's about Jesus. I mean, we look at this passage and say, well, of course, this is talking about Jesus. Jesus who came 2,000 years ago, who walked upon this earth, who was like a tender shoot. Jesus who is descended from Jesse. Jesus who was born in an unlikely place, a dingy manger. When you wouldn't think that life, especially the King of the universe, would come. And then you think about Jesus while he was here on earth, how he was not moved by the powers of the day. How he did not judge by what he saw with his eyes necessarily or what he heard with his ears. How he was unwavering in his mission. He didn't bowed to the Pharisees. He stayed firm. He demonstrated care also for the poor and needy, right? Like at his dinners were people that, you know, like if you were like the king, you wouldn't think, okay, well, let's put a dinner together of the poor or of the people that were underneath society or the people who, like the tax collectors. You wouldn't think of a meal like that, but here's Jesus doing that. And then, of course, Jesus' complete, total structural change to the universe by defeating sin and death through, of all things, a tree. Or, if you will, a branch, maybe. And if you think about his waist cloth, bloodstained robes. And then you think from the stump-like death, what did he do? He rose again on the third day so that we too could experience peace. And of course, if you look at Isaiah chapter 11 and you think about Jesus, you think, man, this is a down payment of what's to come pictured in all of these glorious verses. And so then we're all the way back to the doorstep of Advent. We're again, we are here to remind ourselves that that king is coming back again. And we might live in a valley between two high points, but it's so very bright. And so as we close, could we all stand for a moment? And let me just say this as we close, and I just want to pray for us, and then we'll be done. I know you've got to go get your kids, but I want to say that in between these two high points, we are not totally bereft. He has given us his Spirit. And what does that Spirit allow us to do? Well, it allows us to participate already in the tender move of God to bring peace everywhere. And that's why we see. That's why we see these surprising things like the truth and Reconciliation Commission from South Africa, civil rights movements. I mean, like so many things that we could name. We get to do and participate even right now. And so our King could come to us right now if we just ask him through his Spirit. And so could we do that? Could we hold our hands out if you're comfortable? I'm just going to pray. Come, Holy Spirit. We long for your leadership. We long to be righteous and faithful and just as you are. And we long for peace. And so would you fill us? Would you enable us? And would you send us out?